every buyer story is different because every retailer is different and every region's shopper shops differently. And I think it's very important that you craft that story to actually fix a problem that a buyer has.
I'm your host, Dave Knox, and this is Predicting the Turn, a show that helps business leaders meet their industry's inevitable disruption head on.
Welcome to another episode of Predicting the Turn. Today, we sit down with Anouk Godlieb, who is the founder of Belgium Boys. Anouk, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So thank you for taking the time. So I want to start for those that maybe for some strange reason might not be familiar with Belgium Boys. Can you tell me a little bit about the business and the brand?
Of course, Belgium Boys is really that happy brand. It's waffles and pancakes and everything breakfast to start your day the right way. You can hear it from my accent. I'm from Belgium, and when I moved here, I just couldn't find our Belgian waffle, and we decided to bring a trade up from what else is on the market. And today we're crazy to think about it, but available in 12,000 stores nationwide.
Oh, I love it. In the early days, you were side hustling, get the business off the ground. What were those early days of just getting started like?
Wow, it's been almost a decade that we've been doing this. I'll also bring my co-founder and husband into the picture. But Greg, really, it started, it was born out of, I would say, random. As an expat, Greg is also from Belgium, and he came to college in the US. And like every expat, he was just bringing his waffles and his treats to enjoy for himself. And his friends in the dorms were like, oh my God, Greg, this is so good. Where can we buy it? Where can I find it? And it just wasn't available. So maybe I should explore doing this after college. Maybe I should bring those products to the States because my friends seem to like it. And my background was fashion design. So Greg and I met, I could relate, I could understand the story as an expat myself. And I was like, okay, Greg, let's do it, but it's got to look good. We got to make a nice packaging so that people will actually want to pick up the product from the shelf. We had no idea what we were building. We had no idea what the concept was. It was just like, okay, people seem to like our Belgian waffles. Let's bring them to the States, right? And over the years, we've really fine-tuned and started to learn that. But the early days are not what it is today, for sure.
So in those early days, as a food entrepreneur, you're making the stuff. This was your product. It was family recipes. How did you go from Greg making it himself and that to finding a co-packer and scaling side of building a brand that could go on shelves nationwide?
Yes. So Greg's background, actually, his family had a catering business. And it's, I think that's what originated that like food background, wanting to make people smile, bring people together around food. That's, I think, really what sparked by him why to go into the food business. And he has that entrepreneur in him. That is something that I always found very fascinating and inspiring. He did not make those products in the kitchen. He actually was like, I gotta go to Comans. I gotta find partners that will make those products with me, for me, to sell. Because if we're going to sell in bigger stores, we got to make sure that we're doing it the right way, like the traditional Belgian waffles that we tried. And since the beginning, he was like, we got to find those partners. And I think a lot of those early partners, it was a lot of no's, a lot of knocking on a lot of doors. And I'll give him all the credit for keeping knocking and for telling that story to our manufacturing partners, because it worked. He convinced a couple and they took a leap of faith to partner up with us.
You mentioned it was 10 years ago, roughly, that you started the business. Fast forward in 2022, you started partnering with Camino Partners, which amazing investment firm that was started by the founder of Kind Bars. What led you to say, okay, now's the time, we need to go find an investment partner to help us unlock this next phase?
Yeah. So we had been bootstrapping the business since we started. I think we were experimenting with a lot of things, right? We started the brand it was born out of the nostalgia we had for our authentic treats. When we launched it, we thought, oh, our consumer want to be reminded of the streets of Amsterdam and of Brussels and of Paris, and that's why they buy our product. Now, couldn't have been far from what it actually is. Our consumer, we learned, doesn't even know where Brussels is on the map. And I think those learnings came over time. And in those early days, while we were still figuring it out, Greg and I were like, it doesn't make sense to bring in an investor now before we know, for lack of a better term, what the hell we're doing and what we're building, right? Like, why do you bring in an investor? What will it unlock? Why do you need capital? How would you deploy that capital in a way that is going to actually fuel your business? And in 2021, we knew that was the year to start and find investors, because we had just started with that refrigerated breakfast and gotten some early traction on it that we're like, okay, our gut feeling about refrigerated breakfast, I'm sure we'll chat about that, are right. And now let's find the right partner that can understand what building a category means, that have been operators themselves and can help us fuel that next stage of growth, right? I think what I've learned over the years is that building a company from $0 to $1 million, from 1 to 5, and then the stages that come after are so different, and having that expertise of people that have been there, done that, is just invaluable.
So I do want to dive into that, thinking about the category side. Building a food business is difficult. Building one that goes in refrigerated or frozen is probably even more difficult for the supply chains that go with it. But you took it even a step further of, let's now go in refrigerated, but in a category that traditionally isn't found in that space.
Yeah.
What led you to have that insight of, no, this actually is the place consumers want to find this?
I didn't invent anything. That's the true answer. This is just what I grew up with. And that's what Belgium Boys, that's what we can be best at in the world, bringing those European foods to the mainstream. And that means how the product tastes, what's in the product, the quality of the product, but also the experience around the product, the experience at home and the experience in the store. Now, when we started, and I remember that it was our first meeting with Greg and I, and we were in a meeting pitching a buyer, and we show our pancakes and our waffles, and the buyer goes, oh, that's frozen breakfast. Greg and I look at each other and we're like, what is frozen breakfast? Like, I had never heard of frozen breakfast, because in Europe, that category doesn't exist. People buy those foods, baked goods are refrigerated, and those products are merchandised next to other breakfast foods like eggs, yogurt, orange juice, milk, dairy. That's where you buy breakfast food in the store, right? So why is there another category called frozen breakfast all across the store? And even as a consumer, I go down in the morning to my, get into my kitchen, I open my fridge. I don't open my freezer. I don't stock up on an item that I consume every single day, right? I put that in my fridge. And anyway, buyers told us this is frozen breakfast. And that's what we did. We were in frozen breakfast for the first 5 years of Belgium Boys, 5-6 years of Belgium Boys. And we performed well in frozen breakfast. We were bringing growth to the category. Buyers were happy. We compete against the Eggo waffles of the world. And we were that emerging brand that was bringing color to the shelf. But in our gut, we felt like, this is not it. We have to be refrigerated. This is what makes sense for us. This is what would make sense for the consumer. Let's try it out. And so we had a rotation at Costco in refrigerated versus frozen. And then Walmart actually gave us a shot. It was in 65 stores across 4 distribution centers. It was a logistical nightmare to get the products there. But the data was good. We were actually selling more at Walmart refrigerated than at natural stores frozen. So we're like, oh, we're onto something. Let's keep developing that. So we were at that point in 21, we had been on the shelf at Walmart. We had taken that data, gone to Target, and Target has just launched us, and we're like, okay, this is it. We are going to, in the next few years, discontinue ourselves from frozen and go full on fresh and actually build a category. We know that's the future of Belgium Boys. Now let's bring the right partners to fuel that and to make those investments, because it's not easy to convince buyer that there is a category where there isn't any exist, where you talk to buyers that don't understand why you're having a conversation with them, because they're buying eggs and they're buying milk. And it's about, in the early years, just a lot of no's, and then starting to get that data and keep growing that small way that we started and getting those data points, and then growing very slowly, because there's a lot of just complexities, not around the selling story only, but the supply chain, the refrigerated, how you get it to the stores, etc. So a lot of learnings went into there. And today, if I look at it, so 5 years later, we have no more placements in frozen. We are full on refrigerated, and we are partnering up with retailers to play a category leadership position to create these breakfast destinations on the shelves, which is just crazy to think about how much has happened in the last 4 or 5 years.
Think about playing that kind of category leader role. So you're convincing them to give you the shot at refrigerated. You have that first product, and then you're convincing them to grow that space and maybe take away not a competitive brand, but another product that's there. How did you go about deciding what would be the next SKU, the next format, you know, how to grow your product innovation lineup and convince the buyer that pancakes and waffles and crepes and go down the list?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, and I'll say even the beginning, 2021, for me, it's still, we're a lot of gems of all trade on our team, and we do a lot, and it's really selling with that passion and that enthusiasm. And we were approaching buyers and like, this tastes good, it looks great, it's going to be awesome, its velocity is this and that. And fast forward where we are now, we have just like super talented people on our team and that are experts in their matter and that have really crafted that story in a way that's very different, talking from a category management position. And those learnings that we took were applied all along the way of these last 5 years. But to answer your question on the assortment, I think what we've learned, because we've had a lot of SKUs over the years, and we've discontinued a lot of SKUs as well. We discontinued ourselves from other categories. But those learnings, that was the most valuable. Right now, our portfolio is 5 SKUs. And those are hero SKUs. And I think as soon as you understand that from a business perspective, that it's not the more SKUs, the better, but the more productive your existing SKUs, and how can you keep creating those, call it bestsellers, right? Like by listening to your customer, by listening to the buyers. And it was a lot of partnership with buyers, right? About innovation. What would be innovative? We understood that our consumer, it's like plain and simple is what they want. And they want to be the artist, right? They want to decide if those pancakes, they want to add maple syrup on top, or if they want to eat it savory. And like that really has resonated with our consumers. Not every retailer has yet our full assortment, which I think is a lot of opportunity for Belgium Boys. But in 2024, we actually launched our bestseller mini pancakes with chocolate chip. And that is doing really well. America loves Belgian chocolate and pancakes. So we're learning, but it's how can we focus on creating amazing products versus focusing on we need to innovate, right? Just for the sake of innovation.
Talent is a big part of predicting the turn. And as we talk about talent, I wanted to mention one of our sponsors, Hunt Club. Imagine the power of the best marketers in the world helping you to find your next marketing leader. That's the power of Hunt Club. Hunt Club is a new category of talent company that powers the network of experts, connectors, and business leaders to help you find the best talent. Let's face it, recruiting hasn't changed with the times. Hunt Club is changing the recruiting game by leveraging technology and crowdsourced referrals to find you the best people possible for your company. Stop paying job boards that don't work or recruiting firms that recycle the same active candidates. Partner with Hunt Club.
You made a really interesting comment earlier there around when you moved to refrigerated, you had to start educating a buyer that was used to buying eggs and other things to this prepared food and why that would make sense. And a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with understanding the retail aspect that just because you're in one category doesn't mean the buyer is going to be the same for another category and the incentives and everything. How did you go about even understanding the difference between the freezer buyer, the refrigerated buyer, and help convince them on that journey?
The truth is very scrappy, but I spent a lot of times in the stores just stalking people at the shelves. And that is the truth, right? I just stand there with my little notebook and I write and I see people taking this product versus that product and standing there for 2 seconds or for 5 seconds or for 10 seconds. Do they read the labels? Do they not read the labels? And every retailer is very different. So the story you tell, you build for the solution that a target buyer needs is not a solution that a Publix buyer needs, right? Because they might not have the same problems to fix, right? And for instance, with eggs, what we found out is that our story with the egg buyers was, listen, people come to the egg shelf and they know how many packs they're going to buy, right? It's not because you have 55 different brands that they're now going to buy more packets of eggs, right? They come to the shelf, they buy one pack, they buy two packs, they buy three packs. They usually open the eggs to see if none is broken, and then they take the pack that they want, right? But do you really need so many variety of eggs, or is it about how many days of supply you need of eggs, right? And are you looking for growth in that set? Could you allocate some square footage to Belgian boys? Now, that's the story about eggs, but there's also about refrigerated doughs. Refrigerated doughs has been such a big shelf. Do we need dual merchandising for every of those shelves when people are buying less of refrigerated doughs, right? Where are other refrigerated cases that have been oversaturated or overallocated in space that we can go and present our breakfast destination to? And every buyer story is different because every retailer is different and every region's shopper shops differently. And I think it's very important that you craft that story to actually fix a problem that a buyer has. And for me, there's no better place to do it than in these stores.
I love that. Yeah, it's the essence of shopper marketing, which is something that people just sometimes skip over and don't realize that the shopper insights are the key for really convincing that retailer why they should take a bet on you and how to think about it.
Correct.
Yeah. So while you said you love in-store, you also recently had the great honor of being named Instacart's number one fastest growing emerging brand. So super cool honor. How have you had to approach it differently when it's winning on that digital screen versus winning at the shelf? And what's that partnership look like?
Yeah, it's first of all, when we found out, we were in shock. Like, we knew we had an amazing year. We can see it on our numbers. And I like shout out to my whole team. 2023 was a rough year. And to make that comeback in 2024 and really have figured out a lot of things and then getting that honor from Instacart, it was just, it's a testament to our team's work and the product and just having that momentum on the brand. And yes, I think the consumer, again, is looking for our product as a convenience. We're a quick and convenient item. And that impulse buy on the shelf, you got to make sure that you figure that out in today's age for the digital shelf as well, right? And I can't take that credit. Like, I have an amazing team that works on that digital shelf. We work with an agency partner, Acadia, their amazing team, and our team at Belgian Boys that have really done a lot of test and learn to make sure that our spend is going to the right places and we're not just blindly. We are a startup and every penny matters. Like, we're the kind of company that buys our business cards with coupon codes, right? Like, I will say that. And believe me, I feel good when I see that minus $13 going away before I put the, you know, credit card in there. But that's our mentality at Belgian Boys. And we want to make sure that when we spend those marketing dollars, that it's going to the right audience at the right time when they're looking for our product. So it's a lot about the learnings that we have had from the digital shelf, but also the real shelf. So we partner up with our partners to understand what's in their basket, right? So if we know that in our consumer's basket, there are eggs, there are strawberries, there is produce, how can we target that audience that is also shopping online? And then that's strategies that we've been working with the team at Instacart. And it's exciting because we have really cool plans on that partnership for 25 as well.
Awesome. Can't wait to see what those turn out to be. Moving beyond the business, one of the things that you've invested a lot personally is being somebody that helps future entrepreneurs, sharing your journey on LinkedIn and other channels. Why, with all the busyness of your family, your business, growing, all that, you're really devoting that time to think about the give back for other entrepreneurs?
I'll tell you how it started. And then it started completely like accident or call it, right? Like I think it was in the pandemic and I was like freaked out. I think like every entrepreneur that was running a business. And I started just asking people, other founders, what they were doing. And if I think about myself before COVID, we had a habit of just being heads down, just do your thing, work all the time and just go for it. And what I started learning is that by connecting with other founders, we had similar struggles and I could learn from how they reacted to those struggles and apply to my own business. And I'm sure that if I share this as well, maybe someone else can like learn from something that I learned, right? And how can this just catapult and just become bigger? I did a lot of brain picking. Okay, then why not put those learnings online so that other people might benefit from it? And I get such a joy and fulfillment when I know that I was able to help someone. That's something that's a big driver for me personally on a professional level, to know that I can be helpful in a way that's my, call it mess ups, can be something that someone can avoid by just reading for 5 minutes what went wrong. And yeah, hopefully we can just help each other versus being, I rather live in that world than in the world of paranoia. Everyone wants to take your business, take your ideas, this, that. I really feel if you get it out there, have people just tear it down or find ways to help you elevate it, I think there's better outcomes coming out of that than just being paranoid.
I've seen a lot of cases that the entrepreneurs that help the most are the ones that get the most benefit at the end of the day as well. So has there been something that surprised you from that openness and that giving that has come back and really helped Belgian Boys?
I think it's the relationships that I've just been able to build that just, honestly, sometimes mine, like, I'm surprised myself. I'm like, really, what? Wait, how does this person know that our brand even exists? Like people that are on my list as like people I really look up to. And all of a sudden they're like, I love what you guys do. And I'm like, oh, we have a 3% household penetration. How do you even know who we are? And I think it's those moments that I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And I'm very proud of what we're doing as a company. And we haven't started yet. So I think the opportunities that are still yet to come for the future, I'm excited to find out what those are.
For last question, I want to dig into something that talks about that future and where you're going. On LinkedIn, you talked about the Belgian Boys 10-step plan. Yes. What was that and why did you decide to share that with the world?
So I'll give you a visual. We actually do our annual team retreat once a year. It's usually the last week of January. So I just came back from it and we were on the beach in Cancun. It was awesome. And so we have all our team lining up on this beach and we're all holding hands and we're seeing like the blue ocean in front of us. And I'm telling the team, now we're going to take 10 steps forward. And we go 1, 2, 3, 4. These are the 10 things that we're going to have to do this year to just rock this year. And I feel like I'm giving you the visual because just bringing people together, it's very easy to be in a Zoom room or to be in a boardroom and put a strategy together that is so complicated that you even forget about what is it that we're doing again? Like, how can you just break it down so it's simple for yourself that you don't forget, but also that everyone in the organization can understand. And so 10-step plan, like these are the 10 things. If we focus on these 10 things this year, and they're all across the board, there's a sales goal, there's a manufacturing goal, there's a people goal. So there are marketing. So there's really from all operations of the business, but it's just easy to understand for everybody. That I think that's the reason it works. We did it in 2024 and we over-delivered on our plan. And so it was the first thing that we said, let's repeat it in 2024.
I think that is the perfect place to bring the conversation to a close. So thank you so much for taking the time to share your journey and all the help you've given to other founders that are following in your footsteps.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a fun conversation coming back from maternity leave to work. So thank you so much for spending the time with me.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, hit that rating and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more resources, head over to predictingtheturn.com.